B-Pod Studios.
Dating app for doors. Only better than a dating app because when you finally meet the door, it actually looks like the picture. Right now, save 50% on the cost of door installation with free financing for 18 months. So make an appointment with Right Window because your house will be closer to perfect when you match it with a perfect front door.
Call Right Window.
And door.
Right now.
Call 800-649-3600. Quality products professionally installed for the right price. Right Window and door.
This hour of the Hockey Show is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Spring is here. Get your car ready at Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Go to gettingoilchange.com to save 15%.
Papa Gino's official pizza of the Season 3 Binge Watch. Episode after episode, you soldier on into the New England night, pushing the limits of exhaustion in the name of non-stop entertainment. Good thing you have the ultimate Binge Watch essential, Papa Gino's.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper! I'm stupid. You're smart. I was wrong. You were right. You're the best. I'm the worst.
Yeah, that's how I feel this morning for buying into the Celtics after Game 1 in this series against Milwaukee, just like Paul Pierce. It's over. The series is over. Nope. Shame on me. I'm an idiot. I'm the worst. From the Town Pier Tire Studio, Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Morning, Chris.
How you doing, Jim?
Not bad. Weather's starting to make me real crazy. Didn't like that loss last night. We typically hold off on the Celtics until noon. We're like contractually obligated to hold off until the actual dedicated Sports Hub Celtics show.
We're saving all the good stuff for that.
Yeah, but no, we have to start with them this morning after last night's, I think it was a demoralizing 123-116 loss to the Bucks. And it's not just because the Celtics now trail in the series 2-1. But there's a lot to bitch about with this loss last night from no-shows, complete no-shows, from guys like Gordon Hayward and I think Kyrie Irving as well, to the questionable officiating, which I know a lot of people want to complain about, much like Kyrie Irving, if you just heard that clip there in the headlines with Tim McCone. You want to be mad about the refs? I kind of can't blame you. Go nuts. But the reality is, if you watch that game, the refs were not playing into it when Milwaukee started to really pull away and go on their run on the third quarter. The ball movement stopped for the Celtics. They're bricking three after three after three. They wilted just like they did in game two. And the thing that sucked about it the most, Chris, is that they turned into a pumpkin and they looked like the bad Celtics that we had seen time and time again throughout the regular season. That's the disappointment. So I think the question is, for me this morning, is this the same team that we saw, unfortunately, a lot during the regular season? Or are they still talented enough to hold serve at home and actually make this a series and win this thing?
I think they're still talented enough to hold serve at home and make it a series. I think now this is where the rubber meets the road for the Celtics. There's been a lot of talk that it will be different in the playoffs and wait till the playoffs. And, you know, I just still don't think there's a team out there that can beat us in a 7-game series. That's what Kyrie said. Now they have to back it up. And I always say, you know, actions speak louder than words in sports. So they've done a lot of talking about how talented they are and how when they need it, it will be there. Well, now they need it. So let's see it. Because what happened last night was I felt like in the first half, Jim, they throw in haymakers. And they're like, we're just going to break the Bucks' will. And these guys will wilt. And the Bucks didn't wilt. It was a one-point game at halftime. Celtics were up 12 in that second quarter. And then the third quarter, I think they came out again. And they're like, okay, we're going to throw a couple haymakers here. And, you know, we'll get our double-digit lead back. And it didn't happen. And then it turned into like hero ball. And then the Bucks pulled away as they exhumed George Hill out of his crypt.
Oh, my God.
And he came back to life and scored 21 points.
Chris, that was shades of Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals last year.
With Jeff Green?
This guy? George Hill?
Like, how terrible was he last year for Cleveland, by the way?
Oh, my God. That was the thing. It's like, no, really? Like, how does this happen with bums like this? And they made bums throughout the regular season look like heroes, too. So that was another thing that was concerning.
Yeah.
So. The officiating, though, a lot of people, and I get it, want to bitch about this today.
It's not why they lost, but I found it offensive. I found it offensive what they did in the fourth quarter.
So explain.
So what was happening in the fourth quarter, and Tony Brown was the chief culprit of this, is it was cosmetic officiating. They knew that it had been slanted incorrectly through the first three quarters. So basically in garbage time, they started calling all these BS fouls for the Celtics so that when you looked at the final stat sheet, Like, there was one point where the Celtics, like, with under a minute to go, had more free throw attempts than the Bucks in the game, which was totally deceiving and in no way representative of the refereeing effort of the night. They knew what they were doing. They wanted to make it look better at the end. So now you look at it at the end, it's like, well, 36-32. It wasn't that bad. It's not the reason the Celtics lost, but there was a real disparity there, and it did have some effect on the game. And the reality is, you know, in the NBA, this is the way it is. There's sort of an expectation that if you're on your home floor, you're going to get the benefit of the calls. And that didn't happen for the Celtics, which is fine. That can happen. It can be even. But it was not even until like the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, when all of a sudden they slanted it way the Celtics way, trying Tony Brown personally tipping the scales of justice with every call. I found that offensive, not in like the Celtics loss kind of way, just that it was so disingenuous in terms of the officiating, and it was so transparent what they were attempting to do, so that at the final stat sheet it didn't look that bad.
It was gross, is what it was.
Oh,
it was, and I saw
it made
you,
me angry.
And I knew you were, because you typically don't tweet, especially in the heat of the moment when you're working a game like that. So when I saw your tweet come out, I'm like, oh, if Chris is pissed, I can't imagine how everybody else feels, because I was mad about that too. And that's the kind of thing that does the NBA as a whole no service. For those that look at the league and say the league is shady, it's corrupt, the officiating, you can't trust it, they have too much control over the games, all of that happened in that fourth quarter. For the Celtics, for as bad as they played too, for them to, because of all of those fouls, for them to pull within five with like a minute and change to go, it's like, oh, this is just gross. What are you doing? It's disgusting. So that was offensive. It really was. But I was more offended by the play of guys that I expected to be better, specifically Kyrie Irving, who I thought pressed offensively. He wasn't that good defensively. Gordon Hayward was a complete no-show. And so for Kyrie and all his talk of, well, it doesn't matter about the seeding, they got me, I'm Superman, we're going to flip the switch. For him to have two bad games in a row now here, like, this is concerning. And also, again, offensive, much like some of the officiating.
Okay, so I think you're being a little hard on Kyrie. I don't think he was as bad as you're saying he was. Like, two bad games in a row. Game two was horrendous. I thought he was okay in this game. You know, he got off to a great start, 13 points in the first quarter. And then from there, you know, it sort of dissipated. I think he was trying to get other guys involved in the second. And then in the third, you know, he wasn't terrible. He was 3-7 for 12 points in the third quarter, but it still got away from them. So I don't think he's as bad as you're saying. But still, I mean, was it playoff Kyrie? No. Did he take over the game? No. Did he impose his will on the game or really affect the outcome? No. And so that's what you expect from that guy, given his track record in the playoffs. And you know that he's capable of it. And really, so far, we are what? 8 games into the postseason, and he's only done it in one game. You know, game two against Indiana is the only game I can think of where he just, that was about him. He was like, no, I'm just going to, enough of this. I've had enough of you guys. I'm just going to end this. And so we haven't really seen that. And I think that's been the challenge for Irving all year long. What is the balancing act between, you know, his brilliance and doing what he can do and trying to get other guys involved? And I disagree with you a little on Irving. I could not agree with you more on Gordon Hayward. Just a real tough night for him.
Also, Tatum continues to struggle, I think, which it was because he
really?
Looks. I thought
that was the most encouraging thing that came out of the game.
Really?
Was that, I mean, I know
Brown
he was,
I thought was excellent. Brown was good. Horford, I thought, could have been better. That
okay,
was,
that's
know,
fair.
I don't know. Tatum overall in this series has been kind of a nothing to me.
No, that's fair to say, but he was so bad in the first two games, Jim. I mean, averaging 4.5 points a game.
Well, the baseline was so low, I guess, he was better.
Shooting 23.5% from the field. You know, I thought he was pretty good. And you know what I liked last night? There were some shots that I didn't like. Like, there was one shot, I was sitting next to my colleague, Nicole Yang, and I was like, oh, he had someone smaller on him. I can't remember who it was. I was like, here comes the Kobe turnaround, and he totally
fadeaway
took
jumpers.
It.
He loves them.
Oh, yeah.
That's the Kobe influence.
No, totally. But he did realize, look, I'm not shooting the three well, and a couple times he took a dribble, stepped in, and knocked down a jumper. And I think that's maturity, and at least he got a little bit of his confidence back. Defensively, I think he was horrendous again.
Yeah. Collectively, they were. And what happened to, you know, the great defensive scheme that they had in filling up the paint and, you know, frustrating Giannis Antetokounmpo in game one? Like, that's completely went by the wayside here.
Well, was it possible that game one was more about the Bucks than the Celtics and we didn't realize that?
I guess so. You know, this is why I feel like an idiot this morning. I'm a sucker, you know, after, you know, kind of bashing this team all season long, not believing. I get sucked in after game one, just like Paul Pierce. It's over. I'm sitting here with Felger after that game. last Monday. Nope, it's over. Five games tops. The Celtics are a better team. They're right. They flipped the switch. I'm wrong. You all had it right all season. No, I think it was more about the Bucks because they. I'm not impressed by the surrounding cast. It's not like, look, sat here and watched Bucks basketball throughout the whole season. I've seen enough of them, though, that it's like, okay, Giannis is the deserving MVP, but this is a situation he hasn't been in before. They finally win their first series and, you know, sweeping Detroit, but here they are. It felt like it might be too big of a moment for them in game one. He wilted. He is young. I don't like, outside of Middleton, I think the rest of these guys stink. Even Bledsoe last night, too. He's such a hack. Good night for a local boy there from Arlington.
Connaughton?
Yeah, Pat Connaughton.
Yeah, he was really good.
He was real good, and I think he's kind of a hack, but hell, I even thought he was still on the Trailblazers, for God's sake. But here he is having a good night.
No, he was really good. He had some friends and family there. Hit one of his threes, and somebody sitting in the front row, like, you know, high-fived him. I think Wick Grousbeck was giving the guy the death stare. Like, how did you get these seats?
And I don't think, and they're Euros, too. Like, Mirotić can go off at times. And yeah. I don't know. Like, it felt like what they did in game two wasn't sustainable to me. Shame on me. I was wrong. And that inherent gutlessness that you've seen in the Celtics for most of the season, unfortunately, I think reared its head last night. So, yeah, the officiating did play in. You want to bitch about that? Fine. But to me, it was more about they wilted again. They wilted. This is what they were time and time again last season.
Well, I think, you know, for that, the Celtics, I mean, look, I would say it was a staring contest and they blinked first. You know, I don't think they totally wilted. I just think when the going gets tough for them, they don't know where to go. They don't know where to play. They don't turn to each other. You know, everybody sort of tries to do their own thing to some degree. Like, you know, even Brad agreed that basically in the third quarter, and you said this, you know, you saw it, you're right too, that their ball movement and lead diminished in equal measure. Like, that's what happened. They stopped moving the ball and the lead went away. It got easier for Milwaukee to defend, which meant it got easier for Milwaukee to get out and transition and create stuff. And I just feel like there are a lot of times where they just don't make the extra pass. It's hard to say after, you know what, it's 82 plus 4 plus 3, so 89 games of a season, that you look at a team and you say, like, I don't know if deep down inside they really trust each other.
That's what it felt like. And here I was again after game one. Nope, I was wrong. No, they figured it out. They're going to pencil them into the finals. It doesn't feel good this morning after looking at that performance.
Can I say one thing on the bright side, though?
Sure.
Even in that loss, and having watched that game, and I've watched every game of the series, but seeing that game in person, I think the bright side for the Celtics is this. This series from here on out, to me, is more about the Celtics than it's about the Bucks. If they can dig down deep and find what they've been looking for all season long, which is their best basketball, which is, finally, you can take the sum of all that talent and it adds up to what it should add up to, they're going to win because their best is better than the Bucks' best. I am convinced of that.
Oh, yeah, no, you draft the series in terms of the, you know, so now, okay, you know, Giannis probably goes one, but then it's Kyrie, and then I think like 2 through 6, I'm taking Celtics players before I take Bucks players.
Well, I take Middleton before some other guys, but the Celtics just have a lot more depth. I mean, they have a lot more options, a lot more margin for error. They just have to be able to put it together and trust in each other and just play more coherent, cohesive basketball. But I feel like we've been saying that all year long.
All right. So, again, the question is, after last night's loss, 123-116 to the Milwaukee Bucks, this Celtics team, the same gutless team that we saw for most of the season, or are they actually talented enough to end up pulling off this series and going on to the Eastern Conference Finals and, hell, even getting to the Finals? Because, I don't know, again, looking at the 76ers, if they go, I feel like they still, despite all the Celtics struggle this year, they own that ass. So
I'm
not that worried about that. The Raptors have looked like, well, the Raptors when they get this deep. So let's hear from you, 617-779-0985. It's Casper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Casper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Casper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Time to Kyrie. Uh-oh.
Drives around Kyrie, gets to the rim, scored on the foul. And that's going to do it here in game 3.
Whoa. I mean, it's inevitable. Guy comes down almost 6 times in a row, gets free throws. You know, what are you really going to do? It's slowing the game down. So the run that you would hope to make in a quarter like that doesn't happen. I mean, shot 22 on the game. I mean, it's getting ridiculous at this point. You know, it's just slowing the game down.
All right, Kyrie, big mad after the game. About, 22 times Giannis got to the line last night. I will give him this. He is 100% right. It does slow the game down. Holy crap, that was interminable last night. Like, what time did you get out of there, Chris?
Let's see. I probably got out of there at about 12:45, 12:50. 50 minutes. All I know is that by the time, like, I looked at the thing, and I was like, I'm not making this last tee, because I sometimes take the tee to the games. It's just easier, and I had to take an Uber home. It was past the tee.
Cheap. Let's be honest here.
It's just easier. I don't have to pay to park. You get there in 25 minutes. It's. I mean, I live close to the tee. It is easier. It's much easier way to go.
Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports, by the way. So, the officiating, obviously a bit of a disparity there in terms of, how many times the Celtics get to the line. And, I forgot, too, it was early in that game that Kyrie got to the line for the first time in this series last night.
I didn't even realize that.
Right. It's like, okay. I can understand why he and many Celtics fans were upset this morning. But to me, like, it was gross how they tried to make it even and, getting the Celtics to the line in the fourth quarter. Like, that is the NBA at its worst, and especially slowing it down and trying to watch that damn thing. But the reality is, I'm sorry, look, if you really paid attention, the Celtics lost that game in the third quarter, and the officiating really wasn't playing into it at that point. They let it go. They're chucking up too many bad threes. The ball movement stopped. It was the Celtics at their worst, and it was a lot of hero ball, like you saw throughout the regular season. And that, to me, is the most concerning thing. It's not about the officiating today. And again, I can understand why you'd be mad, but it's more about the Celtics at their worst last night. That's why they lost that game. And, again, no shows from Hayward. Rozier was useless last night. What combined from the field, I think Kyrie and Hayward were 10 for 30. You have the stat sheet in front of you, but it was bad.
Yeah, 10 for 30. I mean, that's a 2 for 8 for Hayward and 8 for 22 for Kyrie. You know, if I can for a second, I was going to save this for the Sports Hub Celtics show, but we can talk about it again at noon. Can we just officially put a moratorium on the Gordon Hayward is back stories?
Yes.
He's not back. He's much better than he was in the beginning of the year, and he's made a ton of progress, and I'm happy for the guy. But I feel like when you say he's back, it is disrespectful on two levels. One, I think people have forgotten how good this guy was in Utah. I mean, this guy was a phenomenal player. He was a franchise player. He was like the best player, their franchise player, on a team he dragged to the playoffs in the West. I mean, they ran into the buzzsaw that was the Golden State Warriors, but he was incredible. So, one, it's sort of disrespectful to who he, used to be and who he can be again, hopefully. And then the second part of it just is, I just feel like the whole thing is, like, premature. Like, it's almost like...
People desperately want him to be
Yeah, back. It's like, okay, Gordon, if you can't reach the bar, we'll just lower it for you. Which, I don't think any professional athlete wants that. So, on both fronts, like, we got to put a moratorium on that. Like, he's a lot better than he was in the beginning of the year. And I know he was terrible last night. But you know what sealed it for me? And you know where I think he sort of mentally checked out of the game? When he couldn't get by Brooke Lopez on that switch. Like, you could see, like, on his face, like, oh, I can't get by this guy now. Like, here we go. Like, you know, it has to be frustrating for him because things he used to do. And look, Brooke Lopez's switch defense was outstanding. He did a good job sort of staying in front of Kyrie. But I turned to one of my colleagues during the game, and I'm like, if Hayward can't get by this guy, like, this is bad news. And he couldn't get by him. Like, he got stoned at the baseline and had to turn back around. And when he gets to the rim, he's having a heck of a time finishing at the rim.
Oh, he defers too much. That was one of the things, like, when he was at his worst throughout the season, it's like, dude, just go to the hoop. Like, you're in the paint. Like, and he defers? Like, that drives me crazy.
Well, I think he knows, though. Like, it's like a confidence thing. Like, when you're going to the rim and... you know, you're getting your stuff swatted and, you know, it's being sent back in your face. Like, yeah, that's hard, especially it's just a constant reminder that physically you're not the guy you used to be. Cause you're like, I would normally go up in my mind and see, like, I'm going to punch it on this guy. Like, I'm going to punch this home. And now, like, you're doing some lean back floater that gets swatted into the sixth row. Like, what are you going to do?
Good head of hair, though. 617-779-0985. Let's hear from you. We're going to be bitching about the Celtics early and often here on Gasper and Murray. We typically, again, push this off into the Sports Hub Celtics show, but there's a lot to complain about with last night's game. We'll start off with Malcolm in Boston. You're first up here on Gasper and Murray. Hello.
Hey, good morning, guys. So I don't think things are ever as good as they seem or as bad as they seem. So I don't think things were as good as they looked in game one or as bad as they looked in game two. In game three last night, that might have been that middle ground where things actually stand, because when things got tough last night, the Celtics didn't seem to know where to go, what to do, or how to solve their problems. And a championship team is going to figure that out. The Bucks seem to have that cohesion and cohesiveness as a unit. So talent-wise, we all know and believe that the Celtics have more of it. But if the Bucks are able to garner that talent and put it together, through four quarters, it doesn't matter who has more talent. The Bucks are able to utilize what they have better, it seems, because to me, I think game three was a real indicative game of what these two teams are and how they are able to play through four quarters. And I was expecting to see Kyrie step up and take over that game at a certain point because we all believe that he wants his own team. And I didn't see that, and that's what I wanted to see, to lead these young guys and show them what they're capable and able to do, because last year they were able to go farther without him, and now you've got him. Step up. That's what I wanted to see.
Thanks, Malcolm. So was that what it was? Was their mental fragility like on full display last night, like it was
a little bit
again?
I mean, look, I think that they are, when things are going well, they play really well. Their challenge is to be able to, when things are not going your way, to be able to change that flow by playing really well, to basically outplay your mistakes, to outplay the officiating, all that stuff. When it's going their way, they're really good, and you see it. And I thought, again, you know, what I said to you before in the first segment, I thought they came out, threw a bunch of haymakers, and thought the Bucks would blink. And when the Bucks didn't blink, it was kind of like, oh, like, we should have this game in hand by now. We don't? Okay. Oh, so, like, this is going to be, like, the full 48? And then the Bucks sort of pulled away from them. They were the first team that blinked. And so that's kind of their whole MO. Again, you know, they're front runners. When it's good, it's great. When it's not good, it's like they can't change it. It's like, oh, it's not our night. This isn't going to work. The refs are against us. Whatever.
Yeah, and I would expect Kyrie to be better, too, because now he is he's not just rich, he's wealthy. If you weren't paying attention, you know, he's, after a lot of the post games throughout the regular season, he'll be wearing the hat with the adorable little cow on it. That's the logo for Beyond Meat, for which he's a pitchman.
Yeah.
He was also an investor, much like, because I read up on this. I'm fascinated by this because of, like, I find him off the court, like, also annoying, but also fascinating.
He's very fascinating.
But the Beyond Meat thing, again, yeah. Pitchman, investor, much like some Hollywood celebrities and... either way, that thing just did its IPO late this week, and it started at $21 a share and ended at like 62. So
wow.
Who knows how much money he now has. So I would think he would be a little bit more up and feeling it, but nope, apparently not. No, he's still the same mercurial, which is just a fancy word for bitchy and kind of a pain in the ass, Kyrie Irving. And it wasn't a good night for him. Chris and I, a little bit of a disagreement on
that.
Yeah,
I think you're being a little hard on Kyrie.
I need better. I need better for all
the
talk.
And if he's
going to be the basketball genius, that he refers to himself in that column by Jackie McMullen that posted on ESPN yesterday, you got to be better in a game like that, especially at home.
Yeah, it's true. He needs to be better. But I would just say, you know, look, I thought it was a marked improvement over game two, which I know isn't saying much, but he did sort of come out and set the tone. And if you're going to say, I think a lot of times... Like, when he says that stuff like, oh, I'm a basketball genius, I think one of the hardest things to do is, if you are somebody who is brilliant at something, to be able to relate and relay your knowledge and teach somebody who doesn't have that same expertise. And I think that's where he struggles. It's kind of like when a great player becomes a coach and he's like, he doesn't get it, or she doesn't get, either way, because it's like, well, why can't you just see the game the way I could see it, like seven steps ahead? And it's like, well, not everyone can do that. And I think that's part of his problem. Like, I've said this from the beginning. It's hard to be sort of a loner and be a leader. Like, those two things don't go together. So if you're like a different kind of cat and you see things differently, then how can you put yourself in the shoes of other people and be able to see things the way they see them?
I think you've referred to it before as him sunning people. Like, he
yeah.
talks to, you know, talks
does,
to guys
yeah.
like Jaylen Brown like a dad.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be so annoying. And again, I thought he would be in a better mood and be a little bit more up now that he is a wealthy man. That IPO, again, $21 to 60 at the end of the day.
Have you tried that stuff? Is it any good?
No, I can't find it. I've heard that it's actually pretty good. Felger said it's pretty good, too. But I don't know. Like, I'm not... If you want to be a vegan, fine. I find most of them annoying. But if it tastes like meat, I'll try it. But
yeah, I kind of want to try it now. I was listening to NPR at one point, and they were talking about this Beyond Meat thing.
The most Chris Gasper sentence ever in the history of the show. I was listening to NPR and I heard about Beyond Meat. I'd like to try it. But first, I have to go shopping at Saks. We'll continue to take your calls on last night's Celtics loss to the Bucks, 617-779-0985. Also want to get your thoughts on it, McCone. But first, we'll get caught up with Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone. And then back after this, Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I'm not going to comment on it. I think they shot a lot of free throws. It is what it is. You move on. We got to set the tone for the next game. We can be more solid. So I'm just focused on us. Obviously, that was something that's going to be talked about. But I'm not going to do too much of that talking. I'm going to be focused on us and the next game.
All right, so that's Jaylen Brown after last night's Celtics loss to the Bucks. 123-116, the final. Gasper Murray, 98.5, a Sports Hub. Sounds like he doesn't want to bitch about the officiating. Then again, he's going to be feeling it a little bit because he's now posterized Giannis a couple of times in this series.
That dunk last night was awesome.
See the bench get up, good pop from the crowd. And then it all went to hell. Your thoughts on this, Tim McCone, before you split for the day. What do you make of this? I know you haven't believed in this team all that much, but it felt like you might have also, much like me, got suckered in after game one, be like, oh, well, shame on me. Maybe they did flip the switch. But then again, here they are looking like the gutless Celtics that they were for much of the season last night in that loss.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest. I wasn't overly impressed with the way that they handled the Pacers, even though they swept them in four games. And so I was absolutely floored with what happened in game one. It seems like now this is kind of more of what you were expecting. I mean, the Bucks are really good. And then last night, too, I mean, you guys talked about it. You kind of threw, like, the best punch you possibly could. Marcus Morris is making shots for the first time in, like, 3 months. Jaylen Brown's playing unbelievable basketball, and the Bucks were right there, and you kind of fell apart down the end.
Even Ojale was pretty good last night.
I don't see Boston now winning, three out of the next four. I don't think that's going to happen.
And is that because of the mentality of the team? Because they – or.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a big question mark for me, too, right? Because the Jackie McMullen piece comes out yesterday, and it's all about how, yeah, it was awful this season, but we figured stuff out, and we put it behind us. Now that their backs are up against the wall, I can totally see this team kind of reverting. And is Kyrie Irving now going to check out when he looks at this team and goes, yeah, no matter what happens here, we're not going to win? They haven't showed a fighting mentality all season long. I don't know why that's going to suddenly pick up here when they're down 2-1 to the Bucks.
All right. What do you guys think? 617-779-0985. Anthony and Waltham, you're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello.
Hey, great show. I was wondering, why is there no criticism of Danny Ainge? I mean, he could have drafted Giannis. This is his roster he constructed. He's won one title in 15 years. If anybody else had one title in 15 years, we'd want them gone. We criticized Bill. We criticized Dave Dombrowski, who actually did win something recently. I mean, it's time for him to produce results. It's a results-based business. What's your take?
Oh, I'd maybe give it a week. The guy just had a
heart
attack.
I know, he just had a heart attack. I mean, rest, you know, obviously, get well soon, Danny. It's good that he's back. And the NBA is a little different, too.
Did Giannis go, 16th in that draft?
15th.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I was going to say, 15th. I mean, a lot of teams missed on him. I would say there are times I feel like maybe, you know, we've had this discussion before where the value the Celtics put on draft picks sometimes I don't always agree with. I feel like it's overrated. You know, some of the later round picks, the J.R. Giddens, Fab Mello type of picks at times, I feel like, well, you could move that guy for a veteran who could help you. But if anything, like, I look at this team and I say, you're trying to tell me Danny didn't build a team that's talented enough? If anything, there's like, if you want to, you know, argue with Danny, you'd say, you should have subtracted some of the younger, more talented guys for
like
sort
a Rozier.
Of yeah, for sort of more experienced guys who are willing to accept a role. I mean, that's sort of the issue. You have guys being asked to be role players that don't see themselves as role players. That really would be the issue with Ainge. It's not that you're saying there's a paucity of talent. There's too much talent, so much so that the coach can't corral it.
Josh in Newton, you're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello.
Yeah, I am. I just think they played too much hero ball last night. I don't care about the refs. And Terry Rozier was terrible. I don't mean to rip on the guy too much. Remember there was an argument about if the Celtics were better without Kyrie?
Oh, yeah.
The team is obviously not better without Kyrie. But I think Rozier is. And when the two of them are on the court together, he is not the same guy. And I would much rather have Smart out there. I don't know what his health status is. But they'd be much better off with him and not Rozier in the series.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a coincidence. You talk about guys that are effective as role players, willing to accept their role, guys who can affect the game without scoring the basketball. That's been my thing with the Celtics all year long is, do you have enough guys that can affect the game without scoring? Because they seem to have a lot of guys who evaluate their effect on the game and their success solely by whether they're scoring or not. And there are other things you can do. So Rozier, you know, he wasn't good last night, but he only took 3 shot attempts. And I think he, you know, his role essentially on this team is to come in off the bench and pick up full court with the defense. That's what they're asking him to do. And I think he did it and he's done it willingly. But I think deep down inside, like, he feels like he's capable of more. And I'm not sure he really knows how to affect the game if he's not scoring.
Chris in Cranston, Rhode Island, what do you make of Kyrie's night last night?
Yeah, I was a big Kyrie guy all year, putting up all his nonsense, because I was hoping that he would just do what he says he's going to do in the playoffs. And now that he's kind of just been average for, I guess, superstar status. I'm kind of all set with him, ready to move on to see what happens next year. And hopefully we get someone in free agency.
Thanks, Chris. Are you a little surprised that, look, and some of the stuff off the court, I find him, like, insufferable, but fascinating. But on the court, when he's at his best, as good as there is in the league. Are you surprised at how many people are quick to be like, "Eh, we're good with him. We'll figure it out this offseason"?
No, because I'm not. And I remember the first press conference he had here and coming on Felger and Maz, and I just knew because he's
a little too outspoken.
Yeah, he's an outspoken guy, and he's a different kind of guy, and he has interests outside of basketball. And, I mean, I want to phrase this carefully, but I was like, I know this isn't going to play well in Boston. There's going to be an element of, like, just shut up and play basketball because you solely exist to entertain me and help my team. And that's Kyrie doesn't buy into that. He's never bought into that. And he's going to rebel against that. And he always rebels against that. And I think people, you know, the tolerance for that in this town is low. And so I knew it was sort of an interesting match from the beginning. So I'm not surprised. I think people get annoyed. I think, look, if he's playing well and they're up in the series and he's dropping 35 points, then they tend to forget about the outside interest he has. But the moment he has a bad game or their team's not doing well, all that outside stuff that they really don't like and they really would prefer to not see him do, it rises to the surface and it becomes a source of resentment.
So on the one hand, and I know where you're going. Like, look, I definitely agree with you. And then some, in some people's cases, it's probably they look at him like, "Ew, uppity."
Yeah.
But there is a difference between a guy like Marty Bennett, who off the field, I think, is doing a lot of things that are, you know, are really good for the community. Yeah. And he's a smart guy and he gets it. But Kyrie, like, he just, no matter what shade, what color, he just kind of comes off as an insufferable DB. Like, and that, I think, doesn't help his cause.
Yeah, I mean, look, like I said, he's a different kind. He's a contrarian, and that's going to rub some people the wrong way. And I think there are times he says stuff where he's his own worst enemy. I do. But he's somebody that's like, "Hey, I'm going to be my own man. I'm not going to conform and do what you think I should do." And I think people don't have a problem with it as long as the team's playing well. But when the team's not playing well, I think that brings up all that stuff. Now, separate from that, separate from his personality or public persona, whatever you want to say, I think this year he's struggled in terms of leadership. He's struggled to connect with his teammates, and he's struggled to be the type of – I think he's learned that being the fulcrum of a team is a lot harder than he thought, especially when you're a different kind of guy. Like, when you're not – you know, when you are like an iconoclast, it's difficult at that point to sort of be – a leader, to be both a leader that everybody rallies around and to be that guy who is so different from everybody else. Those things are kind of at odds.
Tim?
I mean, he's a different dude. I remember that Bill Simmons podcast he did last summer, and that was the first time I had like a long form interview, and I was like, "Wow, this dude's a little out there." But it's also like the press conferences where he talks about all he wanted to do is play basketball and need this other stuff, and he's wearing an Uncle Drew hat. And you're like, "Well, like, I don't know. What are we doing here?" I just
That's a fair point.
And then the Jackie McMullen quotes yesterday talking about how he's a basketball genius, and it's just, I don't know. It comes off as a little much sometimes.
But I mean, I don't think he's wrong, though.
No, he's not. But it's just, like, to say, like, I mean, if Brady came out and was like, "Yeah,
Well, Brady did. I have all the answers to the test. He just said it after he won a Super Bowl. Yeah. That's my point. Like, a lot of it's about timing. Like, if those quotes came out after, like, they swept the Milwaukee Bucks, people would be like, "Yeah, this guy's a genius."
That's true. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, you can't be a lot of it's timing, though, and then roll that out.
No, you're right. But it's like, I have all the answers to the test. And then it's like, "Well, wait a second. It didn't look like you had them all last year." Well, the answer to the test was to hand it off to Sony Michel.
We'll continue to carry on the Celtics conversation. Again, a demoralizing 123-116 loss last night to the Bucks. We'll continue that as we get into the Sports Up Celtics show on our long commercial-free segment. But speaking of Brady, I do want to touch on his appearance on Jimmy Kimmel earlier this week, and we have some leftover thoughts on the Patriots draft. We're going to get to that next here on Gasper and Murray 98.5 of Sports Up.
Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You should be the highest paid player in football, but you're not the highest paid player because you don't demand that. I think you're like 18th or 20th.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you be the highest paid guy?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's usually when I want to answer a question, I always say, like, that's a good question. But I think the thing I've always felt for me in my life, you know, winning has been a priority, and my wife makes a lot of money, so.
I see. Oh, good. That's good.
I'm a little smarter than you think. Actually, it's a salary cap. Everyone, you know, you can only spend so much, and the more that, you know, one guy gets is less for others. And I think for a competitive advantage standpoint, I'd like to, you know, get a lot of good players around
me. I hope the Patriots appreciate that you do that. I really
thank
do.
You.
Yeah,
thank
I mean,
you.
It, well,
thank you.
Divert from the Celtics conversation for just a minute here before we get into the Sports Hub Celtics show. It's Casper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. It's our long commercial-free segment. So the more I thought about this, that's Tom Brady on with Jimmy Kimmel earlier this week. A bulked-up Tom Brady, by the way. He looks like he's put a little muscle on, which is good, because by the end of the season, he looked gaunt. Like, obviously, hey, it didn't matter because they ended up winning the Super Bowl, but at times it was like, dude, just eat something a little bit more. We understand it's about the bands and pliability and high protein, low carbs, but have some toast.
He's on that Beyond Meat stuff now.
Yeah. It's Soylent Green is what it probably is.
Probably. It would make a lot of sense.
But the more I've thought about this, especially at the end there where he talks about his, you know, Giselle making a lot of money and he wants to have a competitive team. He's willing to take less money. And then Kimmel says, oh, I hope the Patriots appreciate that. Yay, applause. That's a plant. That's a plant.
Oh, really? You think so?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, come on. When you have all these
was
other
Jim
guys...
Gray sitting off to the side telling you, holding up a cue card for Jimmy to ask?
These are the questions, Jimmy. Make sure you ask these ones or the Illuminati will come after you. Do you understand? It feels like a big payday for him or a contract extension should be imminent, considering that you're seeing them go throughout the league with guys like Ben Roethlisberger and Drew Brees recently, and even in Seattle with
Russell Wilson.
Thank you. Where's
Ciara's husband?
Where's right? Where's Tom Brady's payday? It doesn't feel like it's going to be coming down the pipe anytime soon.
It does not. And what's interesting about it is, does it mean less to him now? I think there are always people in Tom's camp who are sort of pushing for him to get what he's worth,
and that's what this felt like to me at the end. Like, this whole thing was a plant. Like, see, it's Tom's underpaid, Patriots.
There are always people who are pushing him that, but when push comes to shove, I feel like more often than not he behaves in the manner that he answered that question, which is he's like, it doesn't matter how many times he sees a Deion Branch or a Wes Welker or whoever walk out the door, he's still like, well, you know, gee Wilkers, you know, less money for me means more money for the team and a better team around me. And it's like, dude, do you watch what happens? you don't pay attention, do you?
Especially this year. So, and with this draft, too, there was an interesting article behind the paywall on ESPN. It's one of the few things I actually do pay for. But they posted this yesterday. NFL executives have an unfiltered look at every team in their 2019 draft class. So it's unnamed and former GMs. Just going through this quickly, when it comes to the Patriots, they've been searching for receivers. And so they go with N'Keal Harry in the first round, a freak who can get vertical, can high point the ball, has very good body control, according to a former GM. Let's say Josh Gordon falls through. They have a big length receiver on the other side. Harry offers a poor man's Randy Moss outside. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not buying that. Yeah, I like the pick, but no.
Another GM says...
Or like a homeless man's Randy Moss.
Another GM says, I love N'Keal Harry. He was my number one receiver. They haven't drafted receivers early, but Belichick is really good at understanding every draft is different. He understands I'm taking the guy. He is a receiver. I don't care. Well, that certainly sounds like Belichick. But here's where it gets a little interesting.
Here's the money quote.
Yeah. So this unnamed executive said, their draft did not stand out to me, and they have not been much better or worse than average in the draft recently. But if a lot of teams take a slow corner, they ask them to do what they want to do. When New England does, they figure out exactly what they want them to play. And that's talking about Juwan Williams.
Yes, he said slow corner.
But overall, this executive is saying their draft didn't stand out to me, which is a counter to basically everything else I've read about this draft
from
local media and national that have given this draft A's. You got to take these grades with a grain of salt anyway, because nobody knows, you know, you got to actually look at it through like a 3-year window, I feel like. But either way, people love giving the grades. It's, you know, that generates clicks. But this is the only person I've said, granted unnamed, that said this was an average draft for them.
Well, what's interesting to me is he's saying like their last couple of drafts have been pretty much average. He's saying they're not bad, but they're not great.
Well, who have they gotten as far as true impact players in the last few drafts?
I mean, you know, I think Sony Michel was pretty good, but everybody like ripped that pick. Obviously, they had a lot of injuries last year, but then, like, you know, the year before, it's like you're looking at guys like Derek Rivers and Tony Garcia. I mean, it's been, I think the most shocking stat was the one Bedard had, right? They hadn't drafted a Pro Bowl player since Jamie Collins.
Yeah.
Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal. I think he came up with that, or someone contacted him. And he relayed that. That was stunning, like, to me. And look, they find a way no matter what. Just to go to N'Keal Harry really quickly, I like the pick, but my concern is just that, you know, they finally pick a receiver in the first round, but it's in a draft where the wide receiver class is basically viewed as, you know, not that distinguished. And for me, the measuring stick for N'Keal Harry will be, is he better or the same, or is he worse than Calvin Ridley? Because they could have had Ridley last year, right?
Yeah.
He was right there. He went in between Wynn and Michelle.
They and DJ Moore, too, right? Who went to Carolina.
Yeah, DJ Moore. But for me, it's Ridley because Alabama guy. Yeah. They obviously love Alabama guys because they drafted this running back they don't need. And they, you know, it, obviously the relationship between Belichick and Saban. So Ridley was right there. Ridley had played for Brian Daboll, who a longtime Patriot, you know, assistant with a couple of different stints. Like, that was the guy. He was right there in a draft that was better, you know, viewed as being better for receivers. You passed on him. Now you took N'Keal Harry in this draft. And the other thing is, I'm already seeing some of these mock drafts for next year that the draft next do. And they're...
Oh, it's rich with wide receivers.
Exactly. They're talking about five or six receivers. So did you draft... Did this guy end up going in the first round for you because he's the magical unicorn receiver that's worthy of a first-round pick in Bill Belichick's eyes? Or is it just like... Oh man, we backed ourselves into a corner where we better take a receiver.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy, Alabama, who looks like he's like Julio Jones 2.0.
Yeah, he's a beast. They have like a bunch. I mean, Henry Ruggs, Devontae Smith. I mean, they're loaded at receiver. But, you know, CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma, you're hearing all these names. Like, next year's supposed to be. So next year's supposed to be a lot better. I think last year was viewed as better, and Calvin Ridley caught 10 touchdowns. I can't even say it. He caught 10 touchdown passes last year.
Yeah.
You know, and you could have had that guy. So the bar set pretty high for N'Keal Harry. And then I want to hear your thoughts on Damian Harris, because I think we're in alignment on this
pick.
Yeah,
the more because we were sitting here when they made that pick last week, and the more I thought about it, that it felt like there's a redundancy there at that position. It didn't feel like that was necessary, especially in the third round. They didn't end up taking a tight end, but, well, undrafted. Who's this guy?
Andrew Beck that everybody's now pants off for because he got $115,000 guaranteed as an undrafted free agent.
So everybody calm down, like undrafted free agents. Who knows? And granted, they've done well with them with guys like David Andrews and even Ryan Allen, but still, overall, there was things that I didn't like. I thought that Harris was too high in the third. I didn't like that they drafted a punter. I didn't like that they reeled in an addressed tight end. Like, so I don't know. I guess I'm with this GM. It felt like average to me. I liked the first couple of picks. Juwan Williams, like, well, a lot of it is biased because I just wanted the big Philgram Nas big board to be right, which it was with those first two picks. But I wanted a wide receiver. Harry seems to fit the mold, but I'm with you. Like, I'll look at Calvin Ridley's stats forever.
Yeah.
Because he went in between the fat kid from Georgia and Sony Michel, and it felt like that was a need last year.
Isaiah Wynn.
Yeah.
The fat kid from Georgia. Yeah, it's a name. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the Harris pick, look, it's the Patriots, so, like, the guy will be, like, a 1,400-yard rusher. But it just, he's such a Patriot running back pick. Like, went to Alabama, never fumbles, basically runs like these horses are going to run today in the Kentucky Derby, blinders on straight ahead. Like, that's exactly what they like. And I just sort of feel like if you want to take a running back and you're trying to hit a home run in the third round, then, you know, draft someone like Bryce Love, who has injury issues but could be like a real... I just feel like you could have gotten somebody like this in the fifth or sixth round.
Well, and then the other thing, too, just on the Ridley thing. So did they draft this Harris because it's essentially insurance for Sony Michel's knees? And if that's the case, well, why did he even take him in the first place? And granted, he helped you get a Super Bowl championship last year, but...
That's a fair point.
Okay, for that, we're going to pause the Patriots conversation. But if you do want to weigh in on anything, Pats, feel free to call in 617-779-0985. But it is time for the Sports Hub Celtic Show, right after the Sports Hub headlines here, as we welcome in Sean Silver. And then right to last night's demoralizing 123-116 loss to the Milwaukee Bucks on the Sports Hub Celtic Show. Here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.